You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello, welcome. It's top 25, under 25, all inclusive. We got the podcast. It's Patrick Bexell, it's Anton Rosgaard, and Anton, who are you supporting at the moment?
Well, probably Team Sweden.
You're just saying that because they're 3-0 up, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I would tend to change my allegiance in case Italy was doing really well, but now we see that Sweden still is a team to be reckoned with in women's soccer.
Indeed. We had a little bit of it's halftime. We're recording this morning. You're going to get it in about an hour. We were just discussing the comments of the long shots, and we have a little bit of different approach here than maybe some of the comments. And it's regards to Szekai, obviously, because with the pedigree that he comes from his big brother, we don't really know a lot about Szekai. I think there was one ranking magazine that had him at, was it Bakins or was it Elite Prospects, that had him among the honorable mentions, more or less. And I think that in that regard, you look at it and you hope that Montreal knows something that you don't when you rank him. Because right now, we don't know anything about him. If you do, fair play to you, but not 500 votes, because we are 500 that vote this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Alexander Romanov, for example, when he was selected early in the second round by the Canadians, there was a case of nobody knowing about him either. He was hardly ranked by anyone, but he also came from the Russian Junior League, and it was...
McKenzie had him at 80 at least, so you know.
Yeah, but the case is just that... He wasn't nearby, so that could be just a case of being lost in the shuffle. Florian Szekai has played in the OHL, so every scout in the NHL would probably have him in the loop, basically, because they watch the Canadian Junior Hockey Leagues, basically every game. Someone is assigned to pick up on basically every player who's draft eligible. The question is just, obviously, if Florian Szekai wasn't named Florian Szekai, would he have been drafted? Would he have been ranked by many of the community votes? Would he have been ranked as highly as he would? I think that many automatically attribute the Arber's success story onto his brother. But we have to remember that even though they are brothers, they are still two different people. I had Florian at... Was it 48, I think?
I think I had
him 48, yeah. And the fact is, my reasoning behind that is just that I think that Arber's success story is largely due to the fact that he had to struggle, that he wasn't drafted, the fact that he had to, really embrace the possibility when he got it, because he could see... the normal life that he would have to go through if he didn't embrace this possibility through a tryout with the Montreal Canadiens. Florian, obviously being drafted now, he won't have the same... it won't be the automatic all-or-nothing style for him. He will be... we can see, he was drafted around the same position as Jack Smith, for example. Jack Smith, 3 years... post-draft, there is no one expecting anything from him anymore, as we saw when he was ranked 52nd here. There could be a diamond in the rough in Florian Szekai, for sure, but he hasn't shown it at the OHL level yet. Maybe due to tutelage and having Adam Nicholas and these skills guys being present, maybe he can become a Michael Pezzetta success story, going from being ranked low and few believing in him, but it will be thanks to himself and the environment around him going forward. It won't be just because his name happens to be Szekai.
Indeed, and we spoke a little bit also about other, does McDavid have a brother? Why isn't he in the NHL? Yeah. I follow cycling a lot. one of the teams, I think it was Cannondale, that brought in Peter Sagan's brother, and I've actually lost his name right now, but Peter Sagan's brother, to make Peter feel comfortable. I don't think Arbe Chekai needs Florian to feel comfortable in the Montreal organization, not at all. But it doesn't mean that it's a success story. I love to be proven wrong.
Yeah, me too.
I think we all are. In regards, it doesn't matter if it's Kostenko, Chekai, or Eriksson that proves me wrong. I'm just happy to be proven wrong when I rank someone low. I'm not as happy being proved wrong when I rank someone high and it turns out to be a flop at the end.
But we can just look at Henrik Lundqvist, the King of New York, for example. His twin brother, obviously, like, they were in the womb at the same time, and they both had successful hockey careers. But one of them ended up being the captain for Frölunda for many years in the SHL. Very loved there. He just finished his career, but he didn't quite make an impact at the NHL level, while his brother just...
Certainly did.
Yeah, exactly. He is probably the greatest goaltender in New York Rangers franchise history. So there is no automatic way to success just because you have the pedigree of being a brother. And yeah, otherwise, well, we're going to come to someone in a minute as well, called Rhett Pitlick, who has a brother in the NHL. We talked about Luke Mittelstadt the last time around. We don't know how their careers are going to, you know, pan out. But at this point, obviously, it's good to have someone that you can talk to and who's been through the same journey and can guide you through it. But it's not something that automatically qualifies you for a higher ranking in my book.
No, exactly. But this is a individual ranking. We're all going to get some wrong. Certainly have someone to talk about in not this episode, but the next episode, that where I will be called out on. I know that I will give my reasoning for it. I will probably have to give the reasoning for it in the comments as well. But it's something I stand up for in that regard. But looking at the projects here, we're going to start by looking at Quinton Miller, goalie for Quebec Remparts in the Q. I was actually looking through the stats just this morning in order to prepare, because I actually thought the Sweden-Italy game was going to be at 7 a.m. Swedish time. So I woke up for that. But 20 games... 2 goals against, more or less, 0.91 saving percentage, 14 wins, 4 losses, and no playoff appearance. But and this is a Swedish guy speaking right now. Just remember that. So my perception is that the Q is a high-scoring league. So anytime you get a goalie with a 2 goal against average and a 91 save percentage, I should be more impressed than I probably was in my ranking.
Yeah, for sure. Quinton Miller is someone who I can easily see myself having ranked a little bit too low. He's a local boy as well from Montreal. It's always fun to see these guys getting drafted by the home team. And yeah, he had a really good first season in the Q. And the only question during the draft was just, since the Canadians had already selected Jacob Fowler, whether you wanted to go the goalie route again. But considering they ended up selecting 3 goalies, they could have done a lot worse. I feel like all of these 3 goalies, we're going to get to Jacob Fowler later up the ranking. But I feel like they all seem talented, and I feel like the Canadians seem to have done their due diligence on them. So it's an influx of talent at a position where it was sort of needed. Frédéric Deschaux's signing rights expired. Caden Primo is getting up there towards being 25 already. And Jakub Dobesch is already in, well, he is in Laval now. But you need these young guys to fill out the depth chart, basically, and just see how they can develop. And for my money, Quinton Miller looks like a solid player already. So I wouldn't surprise if he continues to have a save percentage above 900 and does well in the upcoming 1 or 2 years. I would be surprised if he wasn't awarded with one of the one of the six goaltender spots in the 50-man roster.
Indeed, and I'm really I knew nothing, and we spoke about that in regards to different rankings and how we were going to rank people. And in a way, first and foremost, he's ranked number 40 in the list. He's at that same plateau as what should we say, Eriksson, Mittelstadt, Smilanek, Miller, and probably the next two guys that we're going to talk about here as well.
Yeah,
from 38 to 41, there is a little bit of plateau there. It continues up even further, but I think the next break is 35.9, and then it's 42 upwards. So it's like you have that plateau. They could have swapped around a little bit, and yeah, goalies are voodoo as well. You never know how they're gonna go. You saw that with Dishao coming out and having arguably one of the best seasons a Hockey Allsvenskan goalie has had in the last couple of what, five years, 10 years.
Yeah,
and he couldn't transfer it up, or didn't get the opportunity to transfer it up. He didn't get the confidence to showcase himself in Frölunda, and his rights expired. But yeah, it's a pick that is interesting. Local guy, as you say, always fun to see. Probably cheered for Montreal his whole life, and getting that opportunity to pull the jersey on is something the rest of us will have to pay money for.
Yeah, for sure. No, I like also what Elite Prospects wrote in their draft guide about him, that you can tell that he's a goaltender that agonizes over minute positioning details and is constantly finding ways to be more efficient. So he's a guy who can take coaching directions and improve his game. And that is what Montreal has been looking for in the last few drafts. They want guys who are talented, but also hard workers and willing to learn and adapt their game for the benefit of the team. And yeah, that sounds like you know, a good place to start for Quentin Miller.
Indeed. You mentioned him already today. Rhett Pitlick coming in at 39, more or less at 39 in the rankings, combined average ranking as well. And obviously, there's a plethora of guesses when it comes to Rhett Pitlick. Do you rank him in regards to his performance on the NCAA level? Do you rank him at potential impact? Do you rank him because he has a brother that influences you a little bit, because if the brother succeeds, you think that he's going to succeed, which is also true. So we have the Stahl brothers, right? So you got that. I'm not sure. I'm looking at his stats again, and 25 games, 40 games, 25 points. Strong. But do I see someone that takes charge of the game and controls it? Nah, not that.
No, it just feels like Rhett Pitlick has been here forever. And he's still only 22, so he's going to be eligible for a couple of more seasons, since he's only played 2 years in the NCAA as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's done well at the University of Minnesota for the Golden Gophers. So considering that, well, he was 2 years in the USHL post his draft, and he's a quick skater, which is always, you know, good. The tenacity of being you know, someone who can rush up and down, and basically be inserted in, well, anywhere in the lineup that you need complementary scoring and skating. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he can actually muster up an entry level contract at the end of his, at least, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get the Brett Stapley opportunity. If the ECHL team in Trois-Rivières is still alive by the time he is a college senior, you know, getting an AHL deal with the benefit of playing heavy minutes in the ECHL, to just see what we have there, because we have seen with a couple of the guys who have signed ECHL, well, AHL deals in Laval, who have come from college, like Lucas Condada and similar guys, who have done really well. But they needed those 4 years of development in the college ranks before they were actually ready to take the step up. Pitlick, since he's such a good skater, that will always be his major asset. And then if he can build on the scoring depth that he has right now, like, and become a point per game player, for example, in the last 2 years of NCAA eligibility, maybe I will rue my day that I had him 43rd this year. It's just a matter of a lot of players who are quite good when it comes to
And as someone remembered, we had I reread some of the articles because we're obviously starting to write articles for the top 25, and one of them mentioned it was a good draft class because we got seven of the draftees into the top 25, and I was thinking the depth of our prospect pool at that point must have been atrocious. So you know, it speaks to it that well, if you keep your spot here, or if you climb one spot or two spots, you have improved quite a bit because there are so many others coming in that are top prospects. David Reinbacher this year, as an example.
Yeah.
He will automatically get a top 25 spot on the list.
Yeah, just by being a fifth overall pick, obviously. Yeah.
And playing in a pro league at a high level, et cetera, et cetera.
But acquiring an Alex Newhook, for example, that is also like a former first round pick, that's also like automatically they're going to be ranked higher.
You're dissing Elias Andersson because he's also a first round pick.
Yeah, he's a little bit older, but yeah,
haven't had the same success in NHL either.
No, I would love Elias. We're going to get to him later, obviously, but I would love Elias to have a successful year in Montreal and actually proving because he is a talented guy for sure.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy as well.
And people have always said that he was overdrafted at seventh overall, but that does not mean that he wasn't a first round consensus.
He was
first
supposed
round pick.
To go 12th or 15th in most rankings, if I
exactly,
remember.
And that is right around where Alex Newhook was selected, for example.
Then we have someone I've actually watched quite a bit this year, and it's Miguel Trugny. I'd be honest, I wasn't as impressed with him as maybe others were. I was impressed that he dared to go to Europe, first and foremost.
And playing Slovakia.
I was really impressed with that choice. I watched a few games of him. Obviously very, very skilled, got a lot of points on the power play. But also falling into that slapshot trap, being Canadian in a European league, you got to fight. Mm. And I didn't really like that. Which is why I have him quite low at 44. But do I see a future for another small defender in this organization?
Yes.
Would it? Yeah, for someone that we haven't mentioned yet. I mean, do I see someone to compliment him? No, I don't. Do I think his value in the market is a lot if we're going to trade him? No. So for me, that meant, and especially from what I saw in his game, maybe not participating as much 5-on-5, especially not in the defensive zone. Obviously, that's not where you're going to have him, but he has to be able to play there anyway. So I have him quite low. I wasn't the lowest, but I was quite low. I was lowest in the staff rankings. And that was my choice of thinking of Trugny. Very interesting to follow him this year, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he actually retained a spot from last year. He was 38th last year as well.
And it would be very interesting to see what can he do? What does he bring with him from Europe into the organization again to see make sure that he gets that opportunity in Laval, which is going to have a very crazy blue line. Very, very interesting. And in a way, I'm really sad I'm not having the opportunity to go to Laval and watch every other game, because it's going to be brilliant games there, lots of prospects. So if you have the opportunity, and no, I'm not sponsored by Laval Rocket, go there and watch them, because it's going to be amazing. Crowd sounds amazing as well when you hear it on TV. So don't shy away. Give it the opportunity.
It's just fabulous to think that a Laval Rockets defensive lineup will be able to feature Mathias Norlander, Miguel Tourigny, and Logan Mayu at the same time. So if they want to, they can go with really high pace. Well, I mean, Logan Mayu is more of a, bombastic shot kind of guy, but he can still skate really well as well. but just Norlinder and Tourigny, who are both known for their transition ability and their ability to you go from defense to offense and provide as a basically a fourth attacker. It can be really fun to watch, at least. I'm not saying that it will be defensively reliable at all times, but I think that
it's going to be fun, though.
It's going to be really fun. And even if you weren't impressed with Tourigny the entire year, just as you said, the fact that he actually went out of his way to try something else, go to Slovakia from, you know, the just the comfortable life of you know, staying back home in Canada, trying something else. And he still had 24 points in 39 regular season games as a defenseman, as a 5'8 defenseman at that. So,
yeah, and he earned the opportunity to play on that power play unit as well. So fair play to him.
Yeah.
In some ways, you have to rank someone, and then you end up ranked them.
I was just going to say, like, you know, speaking of bloodlines, going back to the Šekai discussion and the Pitlick discussion, I'm really surprised that Montreal or any team didn't take a flyer on Miguel Tourigny's little brother, Jordan. He went undrafted. He was quite high ranked, if I don't remember correctly. Well, he was in the consensus ranking put together by Jared. He was 98th overall, and he wasn't drafted at all. So a little bit surprising. But yeah, especially considering the Canadians had so many picks. But maybe there's just something lacking in this game that we don't know about presently. Or he will just have a monster season and get drafted next year.
Yeah, and also going back to Miguel Tourigny, it's like, he's been to Europe. That means he's and he's performed quite well, which means that if it doesn't pan out after this year in Laval, he's going to get the opportunity to go to Europe and play for one of the bigger leagues.
Yeah, play for Regla, for example.
Yeah, or I was thinking earning some good money in Switzerland.
For sure, yeah.
At 37, we have Nicolas Buda, yeah. Laval Rocket defender. Maybe quite a big role this year in regards to for example, Matthias Norlinder, and doing it well. Also, one of those guys I know nothing about, which obviously showcases in my ranking.
He's also a former first round pick. I remember during the Bergevin era, there was a lot of talk about Montreal they wanted him in the draft, according to rumors. And they couldn't trade up to get him. And then they wanted to trade for him with Chicago. Obviously, the interest remained there, even though Mark Bergevin and Trevor Timmons are no longer here, because Kent Hughes made the trade for... Was it Nate Schnarr who went the other way? I think it was.
Yeah, sounds familiar, yeah.
And for me, that's a pretty good trade. Getting some... No, it was Cam Hillis.
All
so
right,
was, yeah. So
even
was
better
someone,
than
yeah, someone who did really well at the junior level, but had difficulties establishing himself at the AHL level. So the ability to get a former first round pick there, he's still only has he turned 24 yet?
Is he 23? No, October.
October, yeah. So and a local guy at that from Chateauguay. So that is also, if you play with Norlinder and then you have Mayu and you have Tourigny and you have Nicolas Baudin, then you have four offensively gifted defensemen. Might want to even that out with some defense first guys, but yeah, it can be all out attack for Laval Rocket this season. I think that actually Baudin will be in line. I mean, he will be quite high up the lineup if they want.
Yeah,
exactly. And if they want to have someone who can just be the veteran presence on a young defensive, in young defensive lineup, I think Baudin will be, quite highly thought of in that regard.
And obviously, as you said, local guy getting the opportunity to showcase himself and earn that roster spot, and which he obviously has.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2, now streaming only on Disney+.
Next, Jared Davidson. We should have had Jared on here to talk about him. Yep. Next on the list. I keep getting my rankings very low here for some of them. Yeah, again, Seattle Thunderbirds, WHL. I know nothing about the league. This is what you guys trying to rank European leagues.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, because he... Has he been signed to Laval on a one-year deal, or how was it? Because the 3rd of July, he was... Yes, 1 year, one-way AHL contract for Jared Davidson. So he we'll see if he ends up staying in Laval or if he will play for Trois-Rivières this season. But yeah, he has had a
over
lot
a point
of
per game career.
Yeah, and a lot of goals, 80 yeah. goals in the last two seasons, and two really successful playoff runs as well, where he's been above a point per game. So. He's a late bloomer. He's already 21. But the fact is that if you look at, obviously, he had the first two seasons sort of spoiled by COVID. And the fact that when he's played two full seasons after that, he's been a machine for the Seattle Thunderbirds. So he's someone who I think can surprise a lot of people. I think he was an intriguing pick when he was selected, even though he was already 20. I think that Jared Davidson, I think I had him 33rd. Secondary scoring, someone who can provide offense is always welcome to Laval. Just look at Emil Heinemann, for example, the way that he started his career. I'm not saying
the shooting percentage of 50 or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not saying that Jared Davidson will automatically be a Heinemann, but I think that he can surprise people and do really well as a... Well, as someone who can be a complementary piece on the second power play, for example, if he gets the opportunity. But we know that the competition is fierce in Laval now with all these prospects coming in there.
And also you would assume that Montreal Canadiens have a little bit of say in who's going to play at what power play in order to prepare them for their path to the NHL as well.
I sure hope so, that is what they're doing. And Jean-François Houl is focusing on that, because in the end, the only focus should be to prepare, prepare players for NHL duty. Developing players, obviously. I think that Houl has done really well this year, considering the circumstances with a lot of injuries and in Montreal and having to let players go to still squeeze into the playoffs and still being able to develop young guys. That sounds promising for the future.
Looking at the next name on the list is Bogdan Konishukov out of, was it Lada or was it, no, Torpedo.
Yeah.
Nizhny Novgorod. 64 games in the KHL, more or less the full season, 10 games in the playoffs. He's performed well in the playoffs point-wise. He performed well in the KHL point-wise. 25 points regular season, 2 goals, 23 assists. And then obviously, what was it? 10 games, 5 assists in the playoffs. Mm. So into the second round with his team. And really, really, KHL is not a bad league. I still think it has fallen off a little bit because of the imports not going there.
Yeah.
Obviously, to unforeseen circumstances, but on the other hand, you have to respect players that play there. This is one of the top four,
especially young guys.
Yeah,
yeah,
which are rarely given the opportunity. This is one of the top four or five leagues in the world.
Mm.
He's there already. He's proven it, and I understand that the translation factor from a good KHL player to an NHL player is not maybe as strong correlated as it is from a Liga player or an SHL player.
Mm.
But this is a very interesting pick. I like him more from some of the clips I've seen. One of those also good skaters, strong players, and earning that position on a KHL lineup Very, very interesting. This is going to be one of the guys I follow closely this year.
And you will get to follow him for quite some time because he recently signed a 3-year extension with Nizhny Novgorod. So he will remain there until the 25-26 season.
Yeah, and Montreal keeps, because of the non-existent KHL NHL agreement, Montreal will keep his rights for as long as he keeps signing in a KHL contract. Montreal will still keep his rights.
Yeah.
So also very interesting. Someone to follow, someone that you might rank higher later. And this is the, since I've been, I was one of the highest on this list, and I took that into account, young player playing KHL, long, playing proper, not just being on the bench and playing 2 minutes.
Yeah, I had him one spot lower than you, so I agree.
Yeah.
I also think it's impressive the fact that he had zero KHL games going into the season, which means that if you were a coach, maybe you would have tried to, you know, be a little bit cautious with him and getting him the odd minutes here and there, but still, you know, pushing him back a little just to dip his feet in the water a little bit. But once he was in the KHL, he remained there. He didn't play a single game in the junior league at all until the playoffs that were. Yeah. So he was just a mainstay for the KHL team in Nizhny Novgorod for the entire season. And yeah, as we said, he was 19 when the season started last year. And the fact is that just being there and actually producing as well. I mean, we know that Alexander Romanov, for example, is a different kind of player, mm-hmm. and he played for a really stacked CSKA team. But having 25 points as a defenseman in the KHL as a 19, 20-year-old is quite the feat.
Yeah, definitely. So really, really impressive.
I'm happy with that pick.
Yeah, but one of those sleeper picks. Because he's Russian, we don't have a lot of info. We automatically tend to not know and why did they pick him, etc., etc. But this is a smart pick, I think, from the Montreal Canadiens scouting team.
Yeah, and that is also, as I said with Romanov, for example, when a player who is hardly ranked by anyone, also in this case an overager, it can be due to the fact that he's overlooked or the fact that most analysts don't find him to be, well, worthy of a selection. But in this case, I think it's more being, yeah, overager and a little bit overlooked, because how much do you actually scout Russia in comparison to other leagues right now with a war ongoing? And also, yeah, it's obviously what we talked about
situations
that. Yeah, exactly. Like that. We talked about that with the top picks in this year's draft. And when it comes to later rounds, I'm guessing even less, and that you have even more hesitancy whether they will actually come over, because they aren't going to make those heavy dollars automatically anyway.
And also, we mentioned this before in regards to overagers, you have more data. You have another year of data you can use in your prediction, put into your models, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a smart pick, especially in a draft where we really don't appreciate maybe the draft at the time of it. At number 34, Luke Tuck.
He also feels like he's been there forever now.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely.
Oh, speaking of bloodlines again, Luke Tuck. Yeah. So he was 31st last year. Where was he the year before that? He was in spot number 14. Wow. All right.
That's a cliffhanger.
Yes. And in 2020, he was 24th. So he has kind of bounced up and then down again. Is he going into his senior year now, or how was it? Is it junior year? Has he been 2 years?
Year, right?
Yeah, he has already played 3 years in the NCAA. So I'm guessing it's, if he didn't redshirt or if there was some sort of delay with the COVID season rules, then he should be going into his senior year with Boston University. He did play in the World Championships for Team US and had a goal in that, in one of the games. So not the World Juniors, because he's obviously aged out, but in the real thing.
As real as it can be with one league already still going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. And with Russia not competing, obviously. So, yeah, the World Championships probably have a somewhat, well, the same or lower standard than the World Juniors. But still, he's what you want in a power forward in terms of size. The question is just, has he developed more than just being a big guy? I don't know. Early on, it looked interesting. When he was selected, he had done really well for the development program. Hasn't really lit it up at the NCAA level, but you know, he's a 0.5 point per game player. He fills a role, and he's basically that. He's a role player. He's someone that can hold off opposition, and he can you know, demonstrate some grit, and I don't know what the future holds for him, actually. As we said, he has kind of fallen out of favor since he was drafted, just considering the influx of talent in Laval and in the prospect system.
Yeah, and again, we mentioned this over and over again. He's getting a degree at University of Boston, and, or Boston University, and he's going all 4 years. You would expect him to get a degree anyway. And then, you know, that sets you up quite well for future endeavors of life.
Yeah, I'm sure he will get the chance in the AHL by someone. It's just a question whether it will be on an entry-level contract with Montreal. I don't know. At this point, you have to be quite restrictive with your roster spots when it comes to especially when it comes to defensemen and forwards. We'll see what happens. I had him ranked 41st. I don't have a lot of faith left in Luke Tuck, but I think he is a future AHLer. But once again, he is at this point, he is 21 years old. It's anyone's guess if he can become something more than that.
At 33, we have Cedric Gudon. Fantastic pronunciation there, Patrick. I'm not even sure it was half right.
Gaindon.
He's performing quite well in the OHL. Have another year here with the OHL as well. Going to be interesting to follow. Is he a center? Is he a wing? That's going to be the discussion, because if you look at Montreal system, you have quite a few centers. So could he be moved to the wing, especially considering his size?
Yeah, he's already played left wing as well. So
yeah,
he can play both positions, and that's probably works in his favor as well.
For this development program right now, yes, it would definitely work in his favor.
Hmm. I just think that Gaindon, the fact that when we drafted him last year, people raved about his intelligence and his hockey IQ, and then he's been a point per game player for the Owen Sound attack. I think that he plays a consistent game and as an intelligent game, and I think that he's a player that coaches would really like to have in their lineup. So I could easily see him being signed for next year. I had him quite high, I think 32nd, so it's obviously right around where he was placed.
Yeah.
But the fact that Hadi, for example, was a high vote on him and had him at 23rd. That speaks volumes to me, because Hadi obviously knows his North American prospects.
Exactly. You always look at Hadi and see where you end up somewhere around his, then you're pretty good with it.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're going like, okay, I probably missed something. It was the same when David Saint-Louis was here as well, or David Saint-Louis.
Yeah.
Because if you were far off from David, then you were like, yeah, okay, I'm done a blunder here.
Yeah.
Much like Italy has done here because it's 4-0 as well.
Yeah, that's nice also, because we were both high on Konyushkov, for example, from the KHL, and Hadi had him also ranked 28th, which, you know, also works in believing in him a little bit more.
Indeed. We're going to cut it off here. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast. We see the numbers. Really, really impressive. We absolutely love your support. Don't forget to leave a comment if there's something you think we should bring up in another podcast, or if we something you want to highlight that brings to the discussion. Comment section has been fantastic in the first couple of articles that has been published. We really, really appreciate it. I know Pogo is working on all the French translations. He probably didn't realize what he was getting into. He or she, I don't actually know if it's a he or she. So, but Pogo probably didn't realize what was about to happen. So we'll see when the French translations of the article comes, especially these long ones with a lot of players in them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with the Near Mists.